From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump administration has decided not to fight a legal challenge from states against the Affordable Care Act. The unusual move underscores this government's antagonism towards rules that were meant to protect millions of Americans from being gouged by health insurance companies. When Congress removed the individual penalty for not buying health insurance last year as part of its tax reform plan, lawmakers essentially removed a key provision of the Obamacare law. That has now laid the groundwork for the latest lawsuit that claims other Obamacare protections are unconstitutional and should be overturned. Chief among those remaining protections is the universally popular ban on using so-called pre-existing conditions of patients as a basis for denying coverage or raising the cost of premiums. The latest available data estimates that up to 133 million Americans, or 51% of the non-elderly American population, may be considered to have a pre-existing condition, and up to 84% of those aged 55 to 64 have at least one pre-existing condition. My guest is Dr. Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California, and on the board of Physicians for a National Health Program and People for the American Way. He's also our healthcare correspondent. Welcome back to the program, Paul.
Always great to be back.
So first, how is it that simply removing essentially what was the individual mandate, that is everyone had to buy health insurance for it, for Obamacare to work, or pay a penalty, they've removed that penalty. How did removing that penalty and thereby removing the individual mandate open the door for undoing all these other protections?
Well, the way the insurance markets really are working together are based on the three things. One is an individual mandate, which you mentioned. The other one is something called guaranteed issue, which insurance companies have to provide the opportunity to anyone who wants to purchase insurance. And the third part is something called community rating, that regardless of pre-existing conditions, that the only way that they could change your rate in terms of what they charge you would be based on age. So once the individual mandate was done away with, you had attorney generals in roughly 20 states who sued to basically overturn all the other aspects. So without each of these three legs, the stool, or in this case, the exchanges really cannot exist. And now what you're seeing is the final sort of acts being taken to those remaining two legs, the denial of people based on pre-existing conditions, or the ability for insurance companies to charge outrageous premiums based on pre-existing conditions, and then the no longer requirement to sell to anyone who desires insurance. So this is really a very insidious but really harmful effect on healthcare.
And leading the way in the states, among the states fighting this, is the state of Texas, which has also led the way in earlier lawsuits. And, you know, it's not like there aren't Texans who have things that would be considered pre-existing conditions. Remind us, what exactly qualifies one as having a pre-existing condition? It seems as though unless you're a perfectly healthy individual who's never had any health problems, you basically could be seen as having a pre-existing condition.
Well, ironically, the governor of Texas, who is wheelchair-bound, would be dramatically
right.
harmed by
there
this because he has multiple pre-existing conditions. But just for your listeners, being female was considered a pre-existing condition.
This was back in the Wild West days before Obamacare, where insurance companies just basically charged what they wanted to.
Exactly. And from my personal experience as an oncologist, I would see patients who had a cancer, who successfully fought the disease, were in remission for many, many years. But prior to the Affordable Care Act, were always discriminated against when they went to get coverage. And so that's what really makes this very heartless. And the sad part is the insurance community, who has generally not been an ally of patients, believes that this is an essential part, that they're more than willing to cover pre-existing conditions if you do require everyone to buy in to basically spread out the risk pool. But this is, again, something that is reinstituting sort of the real horrors that many people faced prior to the Affordable Care Act.
Right. So it's interesting because the Trade Association for the Health Insurance Industry, AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans, they put out a statement criticizing this lawsuit, Texas versus the United States, where they made it clear that they thought this ex the ban on pre-existing conditions as a basis for charging outrageous premiums. Help to stabilize the health insurance market. They actually liked it. And I mean, it's just kind of an unusual source to see this criticism of the Trump administration from.
Absolutely. And really but I was actually surprised they didn't start to weigh in on this sooner, because once you did away with the individual mandate,
Exactly.
no longer did you have healthy individuals required to buy insurance. And they're the ones that would again bring money into the pool that would could be used to cover the sicker patients.
Now, when asked about the issue of pre-existing conditions in the past, politicians on both sides of the aisle have made it clear that they're against what insurance companies had been doing. Trump himself, during the presidential campaign, during debates, during an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper, said that that was a part of the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare that he liked. So how do they justify the federal government choosing to not fight this lawsuit, choosing to not defend this law?
It's really really hard for him to defend. There's no way I can understand how he campaigned on wanting to offer even better health care than what the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare provided, to now completely undermining any aspects, and particularly the most popular aspects. You could argue that the individual mandate was not popular, but I think everyone, regardless of their ideology, was in favor of removing the discrimination that existed against people with pre-existing conditions. And now the First Lady, having undergone her procedure for the kidney issue, she is forever labeled as having a pre-existing condition and could be charged considerably more in terms of premiums compared to everyone else.
And of course, for rich people, this is fine. They simply dip into their disposable income. It's for those among the rest of us, who, like Melania, would have had a kidney issue, now suddenly cannot afford the insurance hike that may come when this ban is removed. It's just, this impacts ordinary Americans. Another person who said that he was very much in favor of the ban on pre-existing conditions is Mitch McConnell, Senate head, who said that he thought it was a universally liked aspect of the Obamacare law, that everybody in the Senate likes the safeguards around pre-existing conditions. Is the Republican Party staying silent on this current issue, contradicting their own stated support for that provision?
Absolutely. They've remained silent on so many issues and have failed to live up to their aspect of being the checks and balances on the White House.
Now, what about the fact that this is the this protection of Americans is very much something that also would impact Trump's own base? Aren't they afraid of the Democrats making this a big issue in the midterm elections?
It's really interesting, and again, we'll see. If you look at the polls in terms of what issue do most voters care about going into the 2018 midterm elections, healthcare by a slim majority is at the forefront. So to further undermine people's healthcare, I think we'll see how people react at the polls. Unfortunately, what I believe is a lot of his base does not seem to understand that the policies and the actions that he has implemented are at very detrimental to their own day-to-day life.
Isn't it? And then going back to the fact that this very unusual step that the federal government wouldn't defend its own existing law, doesn't matter who passed that law, a law is a law. Once it's the law of the land, isn't it the federal government's job to defend that law from legal challenges? It might fail in court, but isn't it its job to stand up and defend it legally?
Yes, I think this sets a bad precedent. And from what I've been told is that three attorneys from the Department of Justice who were actually set to defend the Affordable Care Act in court resigned as a result of the action by Jeff Sessions to not enforce this. But in all fairness, the Obama administration failed to defend DOMA when it was challenged. Hmm. And so I do think you have instances where both parties and administrations have failed to enforce the laws of the land. Still, this is a bad precedent.
Do you think that the Republicans are basically going to turn around and say, well, we don't want to get rid of this provision and this coverage? It's just that now that the individual mandate is gone, this is simply unconstitutional and we're defending the Constitution, even though, of course, it was they who pushed through the removal of the individual mandate as a first step in removing the provision on pre-existing conditions. I mean, are they going to be able to pull the wool over Americans' eyes making that claim?
It's really, really hard to tell. I will say this. I could understand removing the individual mandate, which was highly unpopular, but to now tinker with these aspects, and as their constituents try to go get coverage in the next open enrollment period and find that their premiums have gone up by 4 or 5 times because of their pre-existing condition, I think that there will be hell to pay.
Now, a lot of scholars think that this lawsuit is based on ludicrous thinking, irrational, it's not logical, it's not really, you know, to claim that it's unconstitutional makes no sense. But if the federal government is refusing to defend the law, what, as far as you know, I know you're not a legal scholar, but as far as you know, what happens to the lawsuit if the basis is weak, but the federal government isn't going to fight it? Does it stand? Does it go away? Or is it a lower court that it'll end up at?
The only thing that I could, not being a legal scholar, but if you look at what happened with DOMA.
This is the Defense of Marriage Act, by the way, which was a homophobic law, yeah.
Yes. When they failed to defend that, the enforcement of that, eventually it ended up going away. So you could eventually see states win on this, the 20 states. But I will say states like California and others are being proactive and passing their own bills to basically make the individual mandate a state law and as a result to still enforce the guaranteed issue and community rating aspects, which are now not being defended by the Department of Justice. But I will say states like California are being proactive, as are many other states where the exchanges have proved to be successful.
Will if this were to go through, if this lawsuit were to win, it doesn't necessarily mean overnight that insurance companies would start charging people more for having had a pre-existing condition. What do you think the ramifications of this could be? I mean, I suppose it could simply take time to go back to the Wild West days of before, and over the next 5 or 10 years, we could see things devolve to that way, but it may not necessarily be immediate.
Well, again, in states like California, where there are clear state laws that are well thought of, just in case the federal government did backtrack, you'll see less disruption here. But in other states that have not been as proactive, you will see a lot of insurers pull out, at least for the next enrollment period, because they just don't know what the certainty is. If you are no longer making people buy insurance and only the sickest people want to get coverage, it's going to be, again, not something that's financially viable for them, and they're going to maybe sit out. And as a result, patients may not have the choices that they have right now. They already have limited choices in terms of provider coverage, insurance plans that are available, but that may further be diminished as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, I think this will give insurers full excuse not to insure people because of pre-existing conditions only, and they'll use the GOP or these lawsuits as a way that they don't come off as the villains.
Right, of course. Well, this is what Ted Cruz, a senator from Texas, said, that he thinks the consequences of repealing the provision on pre-existing conditions would be. He said, if the court agrees with the state of Texas's lawsuit, it'll be that consumers will have more choices, more competition, more options, more individual freedom. because somehow they're apparently hemmed in or imprisoned by the current situation. And lower premiums. That's a win for healthcare consumers across the country. I mean, it's quite shocking to see Cruz spin this as a win for healthcare consumers, when even, you know, Mitch McConnell had said that the ban on pre-existing conditions was universally liked, was liked by everyone in the Senate. Ted Cruz thinks removing this will result in lower premiums, more individual freedom, more options, more competition. What is he talking about, Paul?
Well, I would say this: if you are 26 and healthy, and have really enjoyed no medical problems up to now, then again, you do have more freedom because you don't have to sign up for a plan because there's no longer any individual mandate. If you do decide to get a plan, it'll be very cheap. But if you are one of, as you mentioned, the 130 million Americans that are estimated to have a pre-existing condition who are under the age of 65 and not eligible, you may now turn out to be uninsurable. So for the very select group of people that are healthy, that are paying premiums that are being used to subsidize people with other pre-existing conditions, yes, for that group, they do come out ahead, but that's a very, very small group. And at some point, they will have a pre-existing condition and have to face the consequences. So I think what Ted Cruz is saying is very disingenuous, but very consistent with what the Republican Party has always felt, that this is individual responsibility, that everyone should be out for themselves, and not we're not all in this together, which is not how health insurance works.
Right. I mean, so a very, very healthy 26-year-old who's never had any health issues could buy a cheap set of premiums just in case. That policy may or may not cover, you know, if that person gets into a car accident, because it's such a cheap premium that it was really meant to not be of much use to begin with. And eventually that person, after that, when they realize that that policy didn't cover what they needed, goes to buy a better policy and finds that now they have a pre-existing condition, which will be used as a reason to charge a lot more. And it's pretty stunning that most Americans who have the memory of what happened what the situation was back in 2008, they don't want to go further back. There was a poll done. If you ask Americans whether the federal government should require health insurers to provide coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, 92% of Democrats and 79% of Republicans said yes. So a vast majority of even Republicans feel the government needs to step in and protect them in this situation.
Again, I just don't know what polling they are doing to think that this is popular.
Yeah.
Healthcare has been elevated to a key issue in 2018, and more people are pleased with the Affordable Care Act. You no longer have people running for Congress who are running away from that. They're widely embracing it. So for them to do this now, I think you could see people that are harmed between now and the time they go to the polls in November. And hopefully these people will take the effort to show up and vote.
And just to be clear, also back in 2008, when this was when it was okay for illegal for insurance companies to do what they were doing, we didn't have as many people who were unemployed and or people who were part of the so-called gig economy. And that was, you know, right around when the recession hit as well. And a couple of years later, we had the Obamacare law in place. Now we have such a growing sector of the American population that are self-employed or employed, you know, as driving for Uber or working as seasonal workers for Amazon, who count on the individual insurance marketplace for their insurance. That's where this removing this ban on pre-existing condition coverage would really kick in. So a bigger sector of the population could be affected.
Absolutely.
Now, and before we say goodbye, Paul, I want to play for you and our audience a short video of an interview I did with a young woman in early 2017 at the Women's March in Los Angeles. My producer and I covered the Women's March there. It was right after the inauguration of Trump, and she told me about her health condition. She's a breast cancer survivor, and she explained to me how the Obamacare law had helped her.
My name is Katie Geyer. I work at a nonprofit called Write Girl. It's a creative writing nonprofit for teen girls here in LA. And I'm marching today for a lot of different reasons. But the reason I hold this sign is because
Sure.
It's Save Obamacare. It saved me. And it's because I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2015, and at the beginning of the year. And immediately, the cost of being diagnosed with cancer was about $6,000.
You didn't have insurance at the time?
I had private insurance, but it was the deductible and the out-of-pocket maximum was extremely high. And so I was able to right away get affordable health insurance. And it really helped knowing that I wasn't going to be dropped by my insurance company and that the insurance that I had was going to take care of everything. And I got a subsidy because I couldn't work while I was going through breast cancer treatment. So it was really affordable for me. And when you're diagnosed with breast cancer, I mean, you have so many things going through your head. On day one, I just was worried about my life and if I was going to live through this. And then on day two, that's when I started to panic about how I was going to be able to afford this, because I couldn't work at the time and I was going through so many, you know, treatments immediately. I had a double mastectomy right away, and I went through 4 months of chemo. I had radiation, and it's been about 2 years since I was diagnosed, and I'm still going through, suffering through a lot of the effects of the treatment, and I'm still on a lot of medications. And
you're still on an Obamacare plan?
Yes, I am. You know, when people, you know, just think about, you know, the politics of it, it seems like so surface level. People don't think about, like, what it's actually like to get the devastating news from your doctor that you could die from this. And it's, sorry, I'm getting all emotional, but I mean, they just have no idea how something like cancer can affect your life in so many different ways. And to have to worry about money, I mean, and that this country wouldn't take care of me. And I'm a hardworking person. I've always worked full time. I have a master's degree. Like, I'm doing everything right. And to think that at some point I might not be able to hold on to my health insurance, it's just absolutely absurd.
Meanwhile, so you're a cancer survivor. You're here on this Women's March in Los Angeles. How do we fix this mess we're in?
I wish I knew, but I do know that raising our voices is something. It's something that we can do.
You've been watching an interview that I did with an attendee of the Women's March in early 2017, sharing her story, her personal story of how the Obamacare law had helped her as a cancer survivor. Paul, we need to humanize these stories, right? Because so many Americans have pre-existing conditions.
Absolutely. And cancer is devoid of ideology. It hits people on both sides of the aisle. So the fact that they are now doing this that is directly harmful to not just blue states, but to their heart and soul constituency, I just don't get it.
Is there a place in California, what can people who live in California do now as we wrap up our conversation to address this issue of healthcare? Because it seems as though while Trump is in power and the GOP is in charge, state by states and state level places, especially like California, are the best places to try to push for progressive change, not just protect Obamacare, but build on it, make it even stronger.
Well, again, as more and more efforts are underway to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, we have to try to come up with something that will be better. And that's where you have H.R. 676, which was initially introduced by John Conyers and now has been carried by Keith Ellison, and for the first time has more than 50% of all Democratic members of Congress sponsoring it. You also have Senator Sanders' bill, which now has 17 senators sponsoring it. And we still are trying to fight for a state-based Medicare for All program in California. The important thing is that as people go to the polls this November, is to really try to elevate those candidates that are running to preserve and protect our healthcare system, and especially those that are running on single-payer Medicare for All. But I do think people need to stay vigilant. Fortunately, in California, as I said, many of the actions, including the attack on the individual mandate and guaranteed issue community rating, are protected under state law. So I think Californians will see less disruption compared to some of the people in the red states. But that doesn't mean we should sit back and be comfortable. If anything, we need to get even more involved, elect candidates that will not just protect the current healthcare system, but try to improve it with a Medicare for All.
Paul, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thanks again for having me.
Paul Song is a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California, and the healthcare correspondent for our program. We have been discussing the potential undoing of protections for people with pre-existing conditions in the individual health insurance market. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.